Chapter 4. Music on the Brain. Imagery and Imagination. Heard melodies are sweet, but those unheard are sweeter. John Keats, Ode on a Grecian Urn. Music forms a significant and, on the whole, pleasant part of life for most of us. Not only external music, music we hear with our ears, but internal music, music that plays in our heads. When Galton wrote on mental imagery in the 1880s, he concerned himself only with visual imagery, and not at all with musical imagery. But a tally of one's friends will suffice to show that musical imagery has a range no less varied than the visual. There are some people who can scarcely hold a tune in their heads, and others who can hear entire symphonies in their minds, with a detail and vividness little short of actual perception. I became aware of this huge variation early in life, for my parents stood at opposite ends of the spectrum. My mother had difficulty voluntarily calling any tune to mind, but my father seemed to have an entire orchestra in his head, ready to do his bidding. He always had two or three miniature orchestral scores stuffed in his pockets, and between seeing patients, he might pull out a score and have a little internal concert. He did not need to put a record on the gramophone, for he could play a score almost as vividly in his mind, perhaps with different moods or interpretations, and sometimes improvisations of his own. His favourite bedtime reading was a dictionary of musical themes. He would turn over a few pages, almost at random, savouring this and that, and then, stimulated by the opening line of something, settle down to a favourite symphony or concerto, his own Kleine Nacht music, as he called it. My own powers of musical imagery and of musical perception are much more limited. I cannot hear an entire orchestra in my head, at least under normal circumstances. What I do have, to some degree, is a pianist's imagery. With music I know well, such as Chopin's mazurkas, which I learned by heart 60 years ago and have continued to love ever since, I have only to glance at a score or think of a particular mazurka, an opus number will set me off, and the mazurka will start to play in my mind. I not only hear the music, but I see my hands on the keyboard before me and feel them playing the piece, a virtual performance which, once started, seems to unfold or proceed by itself. Indeed, when I was learning the mazurkas, I found that I could practice them in my mind, and I often heard particular phrases or themes from the mazurkas playing by themselves. Even if it is involuntary and unconscious, going over passages mentally in this way is a crucial tool for all performers, and the imagination of playing can be almost as efficacious as the physical actuality. Since the mid-1990s, studies carried out by Robert Satori and his colleagues, using increasingly sophisticated brain imaging techniques, have shown that imagining music can indeed activate the auditory cortex almost as strongly as listening to it. Imagining music also stimulates the motor cortex, and conversely, imagining the action of playing music stimulates the auditory cortex. This, Satori and Halpin noted in a 2005 paper, corresponds to reports from musicians that they can hear their instrument during mental practice. As Alvaro Pascual Leone has observed, studies of regional cerebral blood flow suggest that mental simulation of movements activates some of the same central neural structures required for the performance of the actual movements. In so doing, mental practice alone seems to be sufficient to promote the modulation of neural circuits involved in the early stages of motor skill learning. This modulation not only results in marked improvement in performance, but also seems to place the subjects at an advantage for further skill learning with minimal physical practice. The combination of mental and physical practice, he adds, leads to greater performance improvement than does physical practice alone, a phenomenon for which our findings provide a physiological explanation. Expectation and suggestion can greatly enhance musical imagery, even producing a quasi-perceptual experience. Jerome Bruner, a very musical friend, described to me how once, having put a favourite Mozart record on his turntable, he listened to it with great pleasure, and then went to turn it over to play the other side, only to find that he had never played it in the first place. Perhaps this is an extreme example of something we all experience occasionally with familiar music, thinking we hear music faintly when the radio has been turned off or a piece has come to an end. We wonder whether the music is still playing softly, or we are simply imagining it.